I think the vintage sport watch category is where there's going to be the most competition. So I'm going to go there next.
It's all about strategy.
I'm going to up the ante a little bit and go Space Dweller.
I was about to trump you on that. Yeah. I was about to say Space Dweller.
I got to go Space Dweller.
It's getting cutthroat.
Yeah, if we're going hard, okay. I got to go for the
Wait, that was a that was kind of a, what do they call it, an oop-de-oop?
Oop-de-oop?
Alley-oop?
Yeah, whenever they do the fake out with the ball.
Yeah.
That was kind of what you just did there.
That's not a fake
out. That's not a fake out. Oh, but
what's the phrase for the fake out?
I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, whatever. You faked us with that. Yeah. You went in 10-16 and left with a Space Dweller.
Yeah. I forgot we're doing fantasy. I keep thinking we're doing like what we would actually
No, this is fantasy. Yeah.
Huge props to Kara for trying to work a football game.
I mean, I would say
as the least athletic
like,
person here, yes, you're welcome.
Hey everybody, this is your host Stephen Pulverin. We're going to do something a little bit different this week. We recorded this episode the day that the NFL football season started, and we thought it would be fun to do a little fantasy football draft, but for watch collections. So I grabbed Ben, Jack, and Kara, and we sat down and did a little six-round draft to draft our fantasy six-watch collections. It gets goofy, it gets competitive, it's a whole lot of fun, and the best part is you guys get to vote on who drafted the best collection. So stay tuned through the whole show. We'll give you all the details and then visit hodinkee.com to find the link to vote. We'll also put it in the show notes. All right, without further ado, here we go. The first ever Hodinkee Fantasy Watch Collection Draft.
Better than ever.
Pumped.
This is going to be a great episode.
I think I'm having a heart attack.
Where's the defibrillator?
That's a bad way to start an episode. I think I'm having a heart attack.
Was the recorder on for that?
Oh, we're going to
kick off with that.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. It's the excitement of doing our very first
Hodinkee Radio Fantasy Watch Collection Draft. Wow, that was longer than I expected it to be.
2019.
Yeah. It's watch collecting season always, but now it's football season, so we're leaning into it.
Wait, what's fantasy football?
What do you mean, what's fantasy football?
We hilariously discovered yesterday, in the spirit of full disclosure, that the three participants in this particular exercise have never actually done fantasy football.
Yes. Whereas I currently have two fantasy football teams.
Right.
Neither of which is any good.
Right.
Which is
I don't even know what a good fantasy football team means. Tell you.
Well, that aside, what are the names of your fantasy football teams?
Oh, good idea.
So that says a lot about people.
I use the same name for both teams. It's Vandalay Industries.
Okay.
It's all right, right?
Wait, what?
Yeah. I'll give you that.
Say it again.
It's a
Seinfeld thing.
Yeah.
Oh, don't
George
get it.
George is. He's an importer-exporter, right?
Yeah. He does import and export. Yeah. Of course. Art Vandalay.
Yeah, Art Vandalay.
All right, so why don't you explain the rules of the game?
Yeah, so to kick things off, I'm your host, Stephen Pulverin, and this is our first ever Hodinkee Radio Fantasy Watch Collection Draft. So the idea here was we're recording this actually the same day, I believe, as the very first regular season NFL game.
Oh, yeah, the Bears are in that one.
Oh, are they?
I saw that on the Today Show this morning.
Nicely done. so what we're doing is we had this idea that to kind of celebrate the start of football season, I guess, or... you know, just because it seemed like a lot of fun, we would do a fantasy football style watch collection draft. So what we're going to do here, I have Jack, I have Ben, and I have Kara. And what the four of us are going to do over the next 45 minutes or so is draft our ideal six watch collection. So we got a bunch of rules. We're going to come up with our teams. And then we're going to leave it up to you, the listeners, to vote on who got the best team. So we're not going to do brackets. There's no way to like compete head to head. We're just going to let everybody vote and see which of the four of us can come up with the best watch collection.
I feel like Jack's going to win.
Have a very funny feeling Jack's going to win.
Oh, well, Jack has a printout, so he's definitely going to win.
Jack is prepared. That like shouldn't count.
What do you mean?
Should we make him throw out his printout?
People that prepare, like that's lame, right?
I mean,
wait, what?
Ben,
no.
One could argue you've spent the last 11 years preparing real hard. So
for this event, for this day.
This event, okay, yeah. The whole company was actually a Trojan horse to do this.
To prepare for fantasy watch football, whatever this is. Yeah.
Whatever the hell this is.
Yeah.
So the basic rules are that everybody's got to come up with a six watch collection, and those collections have to consist of six sort of different categories of pieces. So it's a modern sport watch, a modern dress watch, a vintage sport watch, a vintage dress watch, something that's a high complication, and then you've got your sixth spot is your flex spot. So you get whatever you want in that
flex,
last spot.
Flex like you're like balling out?
No, like it's flexible. Like you can pick whatever you want.
Oh, okay. Not yeah, like yeah, yeah. flex.
No, I mean, okay. You can make it that.
I think we probably should.
All right. Yeah, flex all right. is like flex. Flex
like you're like right. you're going at it.
All right, yeah. We'll go for that then. See, we're changing rules on the fly.
I do not understand this idiom.
Flex, like when you flex a muscle, you're like showing off
yeah, you're showing
your
off.
Guns.
Yeah. Like,
you know?
Like your flex would be like, you know, like a Rainbow Daytona or like a Platinum 2499 or yeah. like, you know, some crazy thing, you know?
Those are both going to be Jack's flexes. He's going to take
sure,
two.
Yeah.
yeah, for sure.
But the killer is that we all know each other really well, so we can steal each other's watches before they get there.
Yeah.
I like to think that I've remained somewhat enigmatic to my coworkers.
You haven't.
I don't know what that means.
We all know you super, super well.
Darn it.
We have you figured out.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Another illusion.
That's what 5 years will do to you.
That's sure.
So the basic way this draft is going to work is we're going to do a snake draft. So I'm going to, in a second, I have our names on pieces of paper here. We're going to determine the draft order.
Where's the hat?
Can you dump
yeah, where's
have,
the hat?
I don't have a hat.
Steven promised a hat.
I know, I meant to bring a hat.
He literally said, I'm going to bring a hat.
He said, I'm going to pull names out of a hat.
I forgot.
That's not the same. How are you going to do randomized? I'm sure Frank Rota has a hat.
Oh my God.
We'll be okay.
I have a hat.
We don't need a hat. We're fine without a hat.
I have the perfect hat.
I'm trying to see if there's a bowl in here.
It is a souvenir Prime Meridian baseball cap from the Greenwich Observatory.
Okay. All right. Carr's got a little bowl for us here.
Well, that's good because I don't feel like
getting
it.
Oh, yeah.
Really cool trinkets in here.
Those sound effects are great.
I was looking for those. Okay, I'm not even kidding.
All right. Well, take those now. Oh,
man. Well, now we got our names. They're in a little basket. And the way it works is we determine the draft order 1 through 4. And then it's a snake draft, so the person who goes fourth then goes fifth, and we go the other way through the order.
So wait, there's no actual snake involved?
No, but you want to just have a snake pick your watches?
I think I should draw the names with my eyes closed so you don't
great.
Cheat.
So I don't cheat. Okay, I see what Carr is doing here. Sweet, so we'll do that. And then the only other important rule is you can't pick duplicates.
Okay.
So if Ben picks a Submariner for his modern sport watch, Jack can't then pick a different Submariner for his vintage sport watch.
Even though it's a totally different category, different.
Yeah. Okay. You get, there's one Submariner, one Speedmaster, one Nautilus.
That was not clear yesterday.
Nah. It actually was, but
whatever. Okay, fine. Sorry. I wasn't paying attention.
All right. CB, close your eyes.
I feel like Steven's going to go first. I like how Steven's participating and giving us the rules.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm first.
Oh.
I smell some cheating here.
That's not cheating.
Nah, her eyes
My
are
eyes
closed.
Are closed.
Are they, though?
Ben is second.
Boom.
Double cheating.
Triple cheating.
Triple
nepotism.
Cheating.
Jack's definitely next.
SJP is next.
Jack is dead last.
And all then right. Jack. But then you get to go first the second round.
Honestly, I would argue that Jack's got the best position.
Yeah, being last is best because you get to go first next.
Okay.
You know?
Okay, so let's all pick the watches we all know Jack's going
to
pick.
Yeah, you kind of have to.
See the printout.
Okay, so are we doing it in the order of the categories that you...
No, so you can pick in any order you want. Oh. So you have to, by the end, have filled all six spots. But you can pick in whatever order you want.
Oh, I thought we were doing every category. I feel like just so it's like a little bit more linear, so like we're all talking about the same thing.
No. Because otherwise... there's like no incentive to have to pick like something that's higher stakes for you first.
Got it.
Okay.
And then the end, we'll do a recap.
So I could actually start with my flex watch.
You can start with whatever you want. You just have to, the watches have to fit those six categories at the end.
All right, let's do it.
All right, Kara, you are on the clock. Round one, pick one. What is the first overall pick in the Hodinkee Fantasy Watch Draft?
Okay, vintage sports watch.
Okay.
Rolex 6239, non-Paul Newman. That's my pick.
Interesting.
You picked that because you know I love that
watch. Yep. I actually had that written down in my notes.
That's my favorite vintage Daytona.
I have that written down in my notes.
That is a good block pick.
Okay.
So now Daytonas are out.
All Daytonas are out.
I wouldn't have picked one.
Yeah. So all Daytonas are out.
Okay.
So the first
totally
overall
would
pick,
have picked one.
6239, non-Paul Newman steel?
Yes.
That was vintage sports.
That's vintage sports.
Okay. All right. Jack, what do you think of that pick? You surprised?
No, I'm not especially surprised. Like Kara, I'm a little bit taken aback by the fact that we are not going through the categories in sequence.
Okay.
But you know what? I'm going to manage my anxiety.
Okay. Well, you get to pick your top two watches in just two more picks.
Yeah. Okay, so Ben, you're next.
Yeah.
So what are the categories again?
Okay, modern sports, modern dress, vintage sports, vintage dress, complication, and flex.
Okay. I'm going to go flex first.
All right. Boom. Number two pick, going big.
Duke Ellington's Patek Philippe
1563. Ooh.
Which is a waterproof split-second chronograph from Patek Philippe, of which I believe they made three. One of them belonged to Duke Ellington. Another one, for a while anyway, belonged to Jean-Claude Beaver. And the third, I believe, is in the Patek Museum. Although I think Duke Ellington's is now also in the Patek Museum.
I believe you're right.
Yeah, boom. I think you're right. Yeah, because they have, what, two of the three?
I think so.
That's a flex.
That's a serious watch.
And it's kind of got everything. One of the three classic high complications from one of the classic big three watchmakers with an absolutely impeccable provenance with an extremely classy guy.
There it is.
Would you wear it every day?
Every fucking day.
Yeah.
All goddamn
just
day.
Flexing all the time.
Just walking around like
there
this.
There we go. Yeah just showing it off.
It's the same case as a 1463-ish.
Right.
So, I mean, it's a 35-millimeter waterproof chronograph, split-second chronograph. So that's pretty neat.
That counts as a flex.
Okay.
All right.
Stevie.
Oof, I'm up. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go, just to shake things up here, I'm going to go with my vintage dress watch first.
Oh, boom.
Ben knows what I'm going for here.
I do, too.
I'm going Patek 2526.
You would.
Sorry, I have to.
I mean, I literally wrote the story on that one.
I know you did. I know you wrote the story.
Basically, this is just everybody taking.
Yeah, sorry.
Everyone's here to troll me.
Yeah, okay, I had to because I know you're coming.
I understand that, but like, at least be specific. Which one would you?
So I go 2526 white gold enamel dial.
What color enamel dial? Do they have a black one?
The cream.
Do they have a black enamel dial?
Not in white gold.
Not in white.
That's a platinum.
Platinum one with diamond markers.
That's not enamel. It's like a brass dial.
Ah, okay.
I'm glad we talked about this.
Yeah. Now you know. Yeah. For people who don't know, the 2526, which we'll link it up, Ben literally did write the story on how this is, like, maybe at the time you wrote the story, maybe like the most undervalued watch out there.
Yeah.
And I think that held up.
It's a great watch. Still have
it's
one.
It's a great watch. But yeah, it's the first automatic Patek. It's waterproof. It's a little bit bigger than most Calatravas. But it's still about as elegant as a watch can get.
So, yeah, I mean, the 2526, it was, so Rolex, at least the story goes, they had the patent on self-winding, rotor-based self-winding movements for 20 years. So, which basically expired in, I think, 1951. So 1931 to 51, nobody else could make a self-winding movement. So Patek effectively had 20 years to make their first self-winding watch. You know, as soon as Rolex did it, they were like, all right, we're going to do one too, obviously. And so this thing is just so massively over-engineered that it is wild. And, you know, a good friend of ours who is one of the best watchmakers in the United States, a man named Alkus, who I'm sure many of our listeners might know. I mean, he was like, this is for sure the best self-winding movement ever made, including modern day movements from the likes of Lange. He said basically the Daymatic, the Lange Daymatic would be the second best self-winding movement of all time. But the Patek, I think it's AT600 or whatever it is, that self-winding movement is for sure the highest quality self-winding movement ever made.
And now it's in my fantasy watch collection. Sorry, man. I had a couple other options in that category, but I don't know. That feels like if I've only got six watches and I'm trying to flex, that's where I'm going to go.
For the record, I own that watch.
I know you own that watch. Yeah, no. I know you win because you actually own that watch. nice. Yeah. So Ben,
was
flexed.
That your second flex?
Ben just flexed twice.
By the way, I have that watch too. Yeah, I'm just gonna flex.
Three
all
flex.
Day.
Okay, Jack.
Jack,
up.
Let's finish up first round. We've got a vintage sport watch, a flex, and a vintage dress watch. What are you closing out the first round with?
I'm gonna start out light. I will not tread heavily in the beginning. I'm going to pick my modern sport watch.
Okay.
And there's obviously a lot to choose from, but this one I have a little bit of a sentimental attachment to. It is the Seiko Prospects 1970 Divers Recreation Limited Edition SLA 033, also known as the Willard, because it's a recreation of the watch worn by the character Captain Willard in the film Apocalypse Now, which I saw in movie theaters when it first came out, when you could still smoke in movie theaters in New York. Saw it in a midnight
show. The good old days.
Gone are the days.
Yeah, the good old days.
And I, you know, brought in a pack of unfiltered Camels and smoked cigarettes and watched Apocalypse Now. And I remember noticing the watch.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, this particular model sold out extremely quickly, as the modern Seiko recreations of classic divers tend to do. But I'd love to find one of these days. I also realized, by the way, that I don't think I actually own any of the watches in my in my fantasy draft picks.
It's all right. You're allowed
to do something about that.
I just also want to point out the fact that you mentioned unfiltered Camel cigarettes.
Yep, I was going
to
bring that up.
Which you happen to have on your desk at this very moment.
Right, right.
He doesn't have the Willard, but he does have the Camel cigarettes.
Yeah.
So
cigarettes.
Why do you have those ciggies on your desk?
So it's an interesting question for you to ask, Cara, because every single person who works here who's come into my office has asked me that. And I can only assume that my colleagues here at Hodinkee have not read the Tom Robbins novel Still Life with Woodpecker, which was a sort of a cult favorite novel in the 1970s, 1980s. And in that book, I won't go into the plot, but a pack of Camel cigarettes is a sort of motif, if you will, because the classic packaging for unfiltered Camels, which hasn't changed in decades, has the two words on it, choice and quality.
Oh, there you
go.
Which
are important ones for a content creator to bear in mind.
A choice, short, concise answer.
Indeed.
Love it.
Yes.
All right, Jack. Yeah. You, sir, what do people think?
So hopefully I've lulled you all into a false sense of confidence.
What do people think of this pick? My instinct, super Jack.
Yeah, it's
very Jack.
Yeah, very Jack.
Oh, yeah.
Jack. Not surprised. And you get to pick again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, round two. Round
snake,
one,
snake
in the
draft.
Books.
In the books.
Yep. Round two, pick number five. What's next, Jack?
Oh, I start now.
Yeah, you start now.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm going to do complication, and this is actually something I think dramatically different from the modern sport watch pick. So there is a Patek Philippe Observatory Tourbillon wristwatch movement, number 861115, with a tourbillon carriage made by Bornand, who was one of the most famous tourbillon makers in Switzerland, post-World War II era. And it was never cased. It was made for the observatory time trials. And in the 1980s, Patek Philippe president, Philippe Stern, took a fancy to it and decided that he would like it cased as a wristwatch. Mm-hmm. And he had it cased as a wristwatch. And it is probably the pinnacle of, it's, you know, a, sort of an F1 car of watches, you know, with the technology of the period, you know, born on tourbillon carriage, Guyon balance, plain steel, you know, overcoil, just an absolutely refined single purpose weapon for telling time as accurately as possible and winning the observatory time trials. And it is currently in the Patek Philippe Museum. But it, honestly, if there is one, you know, classic high-grade Swiss watch that I wish I could get my mitts on and never will, it would be that one.
Yeah, you're never going to own that one.
No.
Yeah, sure. I think it's pretty safe to say you're not going to own that one. Yeah.
I mean,
this
I'm
is a fantasy collection.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
So Jack can dream.
I mean, it could happen. You know, Thierry Stern could wake up one morning and he could say, you know, that Jack Forrester, he's done so many services for Patek Philippe in particular and the Swiss watch industry in general. I'm going to give him that watch.
Yeah, maybe he's listening to this podcast right now.
Yeah, maybe not.
Thierry, if you're listening, please hook Jack up.
Hook me.
It would make him so
hook
happy.
Hook him up, bro.
All right.
Okay.
Stevie.
I'm up next. I think the vintage sport watch category is where there's going to be the most competition. So I'm going to go there next.
It's all about strategy.
It's a Submariner or Explorer?
Yeah, I'm going to go Explorer.
It's fair.
I thought about it.
It's on your wrist.
It's on my wrist. Yeah.
Do you own that watch?
I do own this watch. I know.
I'm looking at it.
It's very surprising.
Yeah. So shiny.
But yeah, I did think, I have to say, after doing reference points to Mariner, I really did think long and hard. In this case, do I go Sub or Explorer? I'm going to go with a Gilt 1016, preferably on a stretch bracelet, not unlike the watch I own. Mm-hmm. But if we're going crazy here, I'm going to up the ante a little bit and go Space Dweller.
I was about to trump you on that. Yeah. I was about to say Space Dweller.
I got
to
go Space Dweller.
It's getting cutthroat.
Yeah, if we're going hard, okay. I got to go for the
Wait, that was
the
a that
dweller.
Was kind of a, what do they call it, an oop-de-oop?
Oop-de-oop?
Alley-oop?
Yeah, whenever they do the fake out with the ball.
Yeah.
That was kind of what you just did there.
That's not a fake
out. That's not a fake out.
Oh, what's the phrase for the fake out?
Head fake?
I'm
talking about football.
I don't know. I don't know what you're talking
about.
Okay,
whatever. Yeah. You faked us with that.
Yeah.
Okay. You went in 1016 and left with a Space Dweller.
Yeah.
I forgot we're doing fantasy. I keep thinking we're doing like what we would actually
no,
like.
No, this is fantasy. Yeah.
Huge props to Cara for trying to work a football reference.
Yeah. I mean, I would
as
say
the least athletic
like
person here.
You would,
yes, you're welcome.
I would say it's like what you would want to buy but with an element of fantasy. Like, okay. It shouldn't be totally nonsensical, but like, yeah, you can.
Oh,
you
now
can
go
and this is why you prepare.
No, you can go hard here.
All right, Ben's next.
I'd go 10-16. Ben, you are up next.
I mean, if this is like real fantasy, then like, you know, I can fight fire with fire.
Yeah, let's go.
Go for it. Go for it.
I want Neil Armstrong's Omega Speedmaster for my Vintage Sports watch. I want the watch that went to the goddamn moon.
Okay.
Okay, you might as well drop your mic now.
If we're doing fantasy, like,
yeah, go for it.
All right.
Right? Like, that's it.
All right.
So I mean, dream big. That's good.
Right, it's the Moonwatch.
Yeah.
So
nobody can pick
Speedmasters.
Any Speedmaster.
Right. Because I now own Neil Armstrong Speedmaster.
So assuming you couldn't own the actual Neil Armstrong Speedmaster, give us the rundown of what that watch is. So if you were to buy the watch that was just like his, what would it be?
Manually wound, black dial, 321 Speedmaster. I mean, you know, super understated, amazing watch.
Yeah.
You know, I've owned 321 Speedmasters. I currently have one. Don't own that one, though.
Yeah. No, yep. No, you don't.
But now I do.
Now you do in the fantasy draft.
It's the 105.003.
There you go.
Perfect. Yeah. I gotta say, I'm kind of surprised Speedy didn't go in the first round.
I would agree. I thought Jack was for sure gonna say.
Same here. I really thought that was happening.
But he went complication first.
I did.
What did you pick again?
For complication.
That tourbillon that Patty made.
That's a good watch.
Yeah,
that's a good watch. But yeah,
it's not terrible.
It's not terrible. That's true.
You should have picked Paul Newman's Paul Newman if you're going to pick a Daytona.
Oh, shit. Well.
I would say we can keep the like historic watches to a minimum since those are impossible. Oh. But you can do
it.
Well,
I was going to pick my Flex next.
Okay.
All right. You can go for it. All right.
The Henry Graves Jr. Super Complication.
Oh, that's
a good one.
I just hang it on my desk.
Should have. That's a really good one.
That's a really good pick.
That's a good one.
Tell people about that watch, Cara. What's the deal with that watch?
That watch was commissioned by Henry Graves Jr. in, I believe, 1927-ish. But he got it during the Depression, so it was like a really weird time. But it has 24 complications. Mm-hmm. I'm not good with numbers. 24 complications, and it's like this insane thing. And on the back, it has the stars that are above Central Park outside his beautiful apartment and on Fifth Avenue. Mm-hmm. And it sold for $24 million. At Sotheby's in Geneva, where Aurel famously came back from being incognito for a couple of years. And yeah, it's just a really crazy thing. Is it the most complicated watch ever made up until the Caliber 89?
Until the Caliber 89.
Yeah, but yeah. It's the most complicated all handmade, hand assembled
but
watch.
Also the most complicated up until the Caliber 89.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was in the room when it sold. In Geneva. With
Will. I was not. They didn't let me go.
With Mr. Will Holloway.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Yeah. It's pretty wild. Aurel made quite the splash.
That's what he does.
Man in the red tie.
Yeah, exactly.
What was it, blue?
CB.
You're back.
Oh,
you're going
sweet.
Again.
Okay. So I did Henry. Okay, which I
Round
do
three.
Next? I'm going to do modern sports. And go ahead, because I don't want anyone to take this one.
All right.
Because I picked Daytona for like five of these, but and then like eliminated myself for all of these. But I'm gonna do the AP Royal Oak 15450, the one I currently have and wear every day, because I can confirm it's a great modern sports watch and I wear it every day and it brings me a lot of joy and I like it.
So you don't want anything more than that for your modern sports watch? So you have a $24 million watch and then like a run of the mill Royal Oak.
Okay, don't speak so ill of my Royal Oak.
I'm just curious.
Yeah, of course. I want this to be, you know,
what?
Reflect me.
Okay.
This is my collection.
I'm kind of shocked that we get one Royal Oak in this whole thing, and it's a three-hand date 37mm.
Yeah, well, you guys should have picked
Royal
one.
Oak.
Yeah.
You guys should have picked one.
Did you guys have Royal Oaks queued up for anything?
Well, I picked that one because it's 37mm. It fits my wrist.
Well, I don't know. Maybe not.
I had, I think, my top pick for my like complication was going to be maybe a 39mm QP Royal Oak.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, now you guys are making me feel bad about
my
choice.
No, it's all good. It's about what you want.
It would have been interesting if you'd done like the 15202 BC as like your sports watch.
Yeah, Cara.
It's like white gold.
Yeah, Cara. That would have been interesting. Yeah. Why didn't you pick something interesting?
I guess I'm just not interesting.
Oh,
no. Okay. See, what's going to happen now is everybody's going to vote for your collection, and we're going to look like idiots. Yeah. So
that's fine.
No, I'm not even done with my collection yet.
Right.
All right, Mr. Climber.
Okay.
We got to pick up the pace here.
You're on the board.
Give me some categories again.
We got vintage dress, vintage sport, modern dress, modern sport, complications, and flex.
Okay. I'll do complication, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do a 1920s Cartier Tortue minute repeater in platinum. Ooh. On a platinum bracelet with a movement manufactured by Audemars Piguet.
Ooh, okay. Okay.
Well, all right.
That also could be a flex.
I mean, it is a complication.
I know, but I'm just saying.
That's a no-joke complication.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Why that watch?
I remember seeing one in the first Phillips sale, the first, reborn Phillips.
Yeah.
They had one that was pretty, pretty special on a platinum bracelet, Cartier signed dial. I mean, it was a Cartier, but AP made the whole thing.
Yeah.
That to me is about as elegant. I love mini repeaters like all of us basically. And that is about as elegant of a watch period that you could get, especially on the bracelet. And then of course, having real horological chops coming from Audemars Piguet, they were basically, AP Piguet did, for example, the repeating mechanism in the Henry Graves.
You know?
So, I mean, it is, they were really the only kind of game in town for repeaters at that point in the 20s anyway.
Yeah.
So to have like the horological chops of AP and then have like the style and kind of charisma of Cartier and then in platinum, which obviously is a special thing. It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. You jealous, Jack?
I mean, no.
I mean, he owns Philippe Stern's.
Jack has the observatory paddock. Yeah,
I've got an observatory paddock. I don't even want the caliber the Henry Graves anymore.
Yeah. Jack looks his nose down at your Cartier Audemars minute repeaters.
Yeah, it's beneath me. Let's move on.
All right. I'm up next. I'm gonna go for my modern dress watch. I'm gonna pick the Acrivia Chronomet Contemporain.
I knew you'd pick that one.
Yeah,
interesting.
I should have picked that watch just because Steven was going to pick it.
Honestly,
right,
that's a very Stevie watch.
Forget me more of like jumping.
Undermining.
Yeah. Forget categories. Like, I think that was my favorite watch of 2018.
You love that watch.
I love that watch.
It's incredible.
It's an amazing watch.
Absolutely.
It's also the first watch I've seen of that style, like a simple three-hand, like totally in-house watch that like, it has a unique style. It has a unique approach. It's exceptionally well-made. It's the first thing I've seen like that really blew me away and didn't just feel kind of like a Me Too sort of thing.
It's so convincing in person. And, you know, as you say, it actually has an identity of its own. It doesn't feel like a Me Too thing, which is very hard to do.
Yeah. And also I was, I think I've told this story here before, but like when I went to go meet with Acrivia at Baselworld, I did it sort of, we were invited to go meet with them and I figured why not like take the appointment. Mm-hmm. And I knew they did great work, but I wasn't personally interested in any of their products before. And then I got something totally unexpected, something I really just had no idea was coming. So I think kind of knocked me off my feet. I'm pretty
that's a good pick.
Pretty in love with that watch.
Yep.
All right, Jack, you got two picks now. Okay. Into round three, first to round four.
Okay, so I'm going to do vintage sport.
Okay.
And I think this might be a little controversial.
Oh, boy.
Just in terms of pushing the boundaries of the definition. So my vintage sport pick is a Patek 3417 anti-magnetic with the caliber 27 AM400.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in steel, I think that's arguably a sports watch.
I would say that is.
You agree?
Yeah, I mean...
Well, dang!
It's the closest thing Patek made to a sports watch in the vintage era, pre-Nautilus, of course, right?
Right.
So I'd get behind that.
All right.
Yeah, and it's a very technical watch, anti-magnetic soft iron inner case, but like a super, super refined... I mean, one of the most visually beautiful movements that you could, ever hope for from Patek Philippe, really at the height of their powers in terms of, making and finishing, beautiful time-only movements. So it's sort of like the most elevated version of a Mark 12 you could possibly imagine.
Yeah.
That's true, actually. I never thought about it, but it is pretty similar to those Pilot's watches.
Yeah, and like I said, there's a purity of intent about it that I think kind of really captures the essence of what a sports watch is and also the essence of what a really great wristwatch is.
Okay, great. You're up again.
Wow.
The beauty of a snake draft.
Ooh. All right, I think I'm going to leave my flex for last. So modern dress, I'm going to make a... fairly non-controversial and I think probably extremely boring choice, but I've always wanted a gold tank Louis Cartier and I still want one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Beautiful.
Great. Yellow gold?
Yeah. Yeah.
One sec.
Stevie's typing.
Is anyone at all surprised that the guy who wrote the book on Cartier picked a Cartier.
I mean, my other possible choice was a Santos Dumont, so, you know, probably
not. Yeah, which you may or may not have on your wrist right now. Right.
So that means Cartier tanks are out.
Yeah. That means Cartier tanks are out. Yes. Jack got the tank. Yep. That's another one, honestly. Round four? I mean, it's first pick of round four, but I'm kind of shocked that the tank hung around that long.
Yeah, I thought about doing that for vintage dress, for sure, like a platinum Cartier.
Yeah.
But I'll find something else.
How about you, Card? Do you have a tank on the list?
Yeah, I think a Cintre is not a tank.
It is a tank.
But in my mind, it's not. So I was going to pick that for my vintage dress
run. It's called a tank.
It's a tank in the name.
Okay, fine. Well, I guess that's out for my dress watch, too. Yeah.
Okay, well, it's not your turn, so.
You guys need to relax.
It is, however, my turn. Yeah. I'm going to go with my modern sport watch.
I already picked that.
You picked a vintage. So modern sport watch, actually, I think is the category that gave me the hardest time because there's so many different directions you could go. I mean, Ben brought up the fact you could go for like the white gold salmon dial Royal Oak. You could go kind of a sport watch that's like a sport watch, but it's kind of over the top. And I thought about, 5711, thought about a bunch of different things. But ultimately, I think when it comes down to it, I think I'm going to go Tudor Black Bay 58. I think I'm going to go.
So let's just stop right here. Is this a fantasy draft or is this, cause like, that's not, I'll buy you that tomorrow. You know what I mean? I won't actually for the record, but like, that's like
it's a fantasy. It's fantasy, like fantasy football. It's like a fake collection. It's not fantasy. Like if you could own anything on the planet.
Okay.
Great.
that's exciting. I just think like,
it's a great, look, I have one. It's an amazing watch.
I just think if you're going to go again, if you're boiling a watch collection down to six watches and you've only got one modern sport watch, like, I want something I can wear to the beach. I want something I can wear when I'm traveling. Something that looks great, feels great, but that I don't have to worry about.
Yep.
And that to me is one of the beauties of the Black Bay 58 is it's kind of like wearing a vintage sub, but you don't have to worry about it.
Okay.
Sweet. Mr. Clymer, you're up next.
So vintage dress watch. I mean, the Platinum Cintre. On a bracelet, black dial, that would be...
That's right a killer there, watch.
But can't do it because...
Because you took the tank.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to go in a different direction and move over to Japan.
Oh,
and go with Grand Seiko.
Oh, so, right. Sticking it to Jack where it hurts.
Well, maybe. So Grand Seiko, their very first watch, the 3180, they called it the first. It's mostly known in gold capped. That's the kind of like the basic model. They made a few in platinum. Incredibly rare watch. I have, frankly, and now I'm about to blow up this watch, so like I'll never get one. I've been hunting one for 5 years. Like they just don't exist. I was offered one once in Japan. It was like $100,000 or like it was just like totally out of question. It is to me one of the most elegant, understated, incredible watches ever made. It is the first Grand Seiko. It's platinum. To the idea that like Grand Seiko would jump from a gold filled watch to a platinum watch for their very first watch is a pretty compelling thing.
I have to say, I think that's a brilliant and very imaginative choice.
Thank you, Jack.
I mean, one of the fascinating things for all of the reasons that you've mentioned, and they're just. As you say, I've never seen one.
Yeah, no.
I've never heard of one.
I've got like one in my WhatsApp somewhere from some guy in Japan. I truly do want to see it. But to me, it's like it remains one of my holy grails. Like it's just, it's such a special thing, and it's pretty neat. So as you guys know, they did that reedition recently. Mm-hmm. They did a reedition in platinum, which I own. And I bought that because I couldn't get the original one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's pretty neat.
That's a super interesting pick.
Pretty exceptional, yeah. I think we're going to have a hard time beating that in that category.
Boom. No, I mean, I'm going to beat it right now.
There's a reason you're the boss.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. CB thinks she can beat it. All right, let's go.
For my vintage dress watch, I'm going to do a Cartier. Was going to do a Tank Cintre, which I realize is a tank because I wrote tank right here. In yellow gold with a bracelet.
You played yourself.
Pivot. To one of the original Cartier crashes.
That's a good one. This is for vintage dress.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. That's a good pick.
Boom. How
that's
about
another
them
one.
Apples?
I kind of expected you to pick that, I gotta say.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Great.
It's a great pick. Come on, you can't go wrong with that.
I am, yes. Well,
So you said the original Cartier crash. What are you talking about there?
The 1967 crash, which rumor has it was a Benoit. Or a tank that was in a car crash.
Yeah, unconfirmed.
Unconfirmed. Yeah, yeah. This is That's folklore. Watch folklore, apocrypha, which is my favorite right kind of folklore.
When I was working on the Cartier watch book, I asked them for their official position on the origin story. And the reply I received was, this is preserved as a legend as part of the heritage of the House of Cartier.
Oh, okay. So they agree it's folklore. No comment. Yeah.
No, basically.
But it's the folklore. Yeah. And so they came out of London because back in the day, Cartier only retailed out of Paris, London, and New York. And they were three different individually owned companies, basically. Yeah.
Yeah.
So each Maison in each location produced different things and would sign different things. Like in New York, Patek would sign, but they would have like Patek signed by Cartier, so on and so forth. So I just have always really loved the crash. And a lot of people think it's like a Dali watch, which like really irks me for some reason because it's not.
But you could see why they would think
I could
that.
See why, but like it just, I don't know why that bothers me so much. But they,
I mean, you know, to be fair, it's not impossible that the one of the design inspirations for the crash was actually.
Maybe. But I don't think we'll ever know.
Yeah. The painting.
Because Dali's dead.
Yeah, the painting in question is called the painting in question is called The Persistence of Memory.
Yeah.
If anyone's curious.
Yeah, well,
but they actually have a recreation in the London boutique now.
One per month.
It's
pretty cool.
And it's the exact same proportions. It's smaller than the current model, one that they make. It's really beautiful.
Yeah.
So that would be my vintage dress watch, and I get to go again.
You get to go again. You're up.
Boom.
CB.
So
kicking off round five.
For complications, I'm going to do the 3448 in white gold.
Ooh, that's a good watch.
Perpetual calendar.
I got to be honest.
Automatic.
I was going to pick that. You just sniped me.
I'm so glad I did that because I saved my modern dress for last, which was a strategic move. And yeah, so that's what I would pick for my complication watch because A, you can wear it. B, I just have always loved that watch when I first saw it. Working at Sotheby's, it left a huge impression on me because it was just like such a cool case. And
so you said in white?
In white.
Okay.
They did do them in platinum.
They did do them in platinum, like, but I find platinum like cold to the skin. So
interesting.
Cold to the skin.
I find platinum heavy, which I love.
Yeah. I'm a lady. It's just too heavy for my little dainty wrist to carry. So.
Okay. Sure.
Let's just leave that.
But it was the first automatic perpetual calendar ever made, I believe.
Yep.
It's got that super minimal display.
Yeah.
It's
they call it the, what do they call it?
Padalone.
Padalone, yeah. It looks like a space saucer.
Yeah, no, a frying pan.
Frying pan.
Padalone is frying pan.
Yeah, I thought it was a spaceship.
Padalone, large frying pan.
No, Padalone is the 8170 one.
Same. It's the same name for this.
Same one, yeah.
Well, you live and you learn, folks.
Disco Volante is flying saucer.
There we go.
And which one watch is that? That
Jack's
is one, too.
Knowledge.
What's that?
That is another watch.
That's another watch.
Yeah.
All right, well, anyway. 3448, white gold, boom.
Boom. Ben, you're on the clock. You got two picks left.
So I've got my two modern watches left, right?
Yeah.
Two modern. Okay, so modern sport, I think, like, there's so many good options, so I'm going to save that for last. Like, there's, like, a bunch of stuff you really can't go wrong with. Like,
right.
So that's the easy one. So modern dress, so many good things to choose from here. Lange 1. Pearl de Marit Lange, Richard Lange, I really like. A Roger Smith, a Kari. But in the end of the day, I'm going to do 4-man. So you got to go Simplicity. But Simplicity, case number 00, 34 millimeters in white gold, belonging to the man himself.
Wow.
There we go.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of hard to imagine a better modern dress watch.
Right.
I mean, that kind of is the modern dress watch, right?
That's
yeah. Even though it's 34 millimeters?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think if, you know, again, I think I'm still unclear of what fantasy means in this context.
That's fine. It makes the game more fun that
way.
Maybe by the
end,
you'll
figure it out.
But
honestly, it's better because we're getting collections that are not what I was expecting, which is way more fun.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I think like...
I've had to make some mid-course corrections.
Yeah, it's good.
The 37 is better on the wrist for sure. I actually don't love the guilloche dial, which that one is, versus the lacquer dial. But I think, you know, when you think of the history and you think of...
Yeah.
Even my own relationship with Dufour, you know, it's such a, that's like meeting him for the first time was such a big moment in my career. He came to our summit when we did that, you know, and that would be the dress watch don't, as far as I'm concerned, you know.
Yeah, makes sense. Can't really argue with that.
Yep.
Also, 34 millimeters, I think, is a pretty standard size
pretty
for
chic.
Dress watch.
Yeah, it's pretty chic. Yeah,
I think it's like a good move.
Yeah.
You jealous yet, Jack? I keep waiting for Jack to be jealous of something.
Well, you know, the wonderful thing about watches is there's so many of them.
God, you are so zen.
Man, Jack is coming in
with chill
vibes.
Enlightened over here.
Yeah.
It was the tea I made.
It is.
Is it the shoes?
Yeah.
It's the ayahuasca tea.
Is it the $4 Chinatown?
That is not chill at all, Cara.
Straw sold kung fu shoes?
Yeah. Jack's wearing kung fu shoes right now.
Jack's wearing kung fu shoes.
Oh, I see that.
Yeah, okay.
So how many multiples of those shoes would it take to get to one pair of those shoes?
We don't need to talk about that. That's a different episode.
All right. Okay.
Cara's wearing golden geese right now.
Yeah.
Don't tell
me.
Are
we
going
to do a luxe sneakers episode of Hodinkee Radio?
Yeah, what shoes are you wearing?
Dude, you got me on the one day that I'm
wearing.
Are those
your YSL shoes?
Okay. Oh, boy. One day that I wear expensive shoes.
There we go.
And very sharp socks.
Yeah.
Polka dots.
Should we link those up in the show notes? The Ben Clymer socks? I bet you we could sell them out.
These were actually a gift to me from that sock company. Remember that?
Which sock company?
I don't know, whatever. This doesn't matter.
Also, you always make fun of my golden geese when you're wearing your fancy sneakers.
There we go.
Oh,
right, Stevie.
A look inside the Hodinkee office.
Yeah, maybe we can cut that segment out.
All right. I've got two picks left. You know, I'm going to go for my complication since Cara thwarted me by picking the 3448 Patek.
Well, thwarted.
I'm going to go for the other Patalone. I'm going to go 8171 Rolex, which is the triple calendar moon phase, which you can read all about in the Hodinkee magazine.
Volume 4.
Volume 4. Yep.
Written
by Mr. Clymer. Yes. Yeah, I'm going to go for a steel 8171, specifically the version that has the steel hands and the steel 12 at 12 o'clock, not the one that has the contrasting gold hands and 12.
Approve.
For some reason, I don't like the one with the gold markers. It just that contrast, that two-tone contrast just doesn't work for me. But yeah, I'm not generally a complicated watch guy, but I like that this watch, despite being a triple calendar moon phase, still has that sort of clean design, really open dial. It feels like a complicated watch you could really wear every day.
You do strike me as a time-only watch kind of guy.
It's kind of my shtick, right?
Yeah. Good choice, though. I like that one.
Yeah? All right. Good.
Jack?
I mean, Stephen, aren't simplicity and complexity merely two sides of the same coin?
Sure. We'll go with that. You're on the clock though, dude. You got your last two picks to make. Let's round it out.
So I've got vintage dress and I've got flex left.
All right.
So for vintage dress, and they have become four times as expensive as when I first got interested in them, I would very much like to re-own an Omega 30 T2RG chronometer. Mm-hmm. It's sort of the more approachable version of that that Patek Bornon Tourbillon. You know, it's a very, very simple watch, but you know, again, if the Bornon Tourbillon represents the absolute height of precision timekeeping on a bespoke basis, this particular watch, I think, represents the absolute height of accurate timekeeping in a mass-produced watch. It is a mass-produced watch, but made at a time when there was a tremendous, tremendous commitment across the board in the industry, I think, especially from the major makers, to really making things to a very, very high standard. And I've actually had a chance. I don't do much watchmaking. I don't do any watchmaking anymore as a hobby, but I used to. And I actually had a chance to own one of these at one point and to work on it. And it was such a delight to work on. It had obviously been made with the intention of making a movement that was extremely easy to work on, very watchmaker friendly. It seemed to just assemble itself when it came time to put it back together. So just a wonderful, wonderful, very simple, beautifully made machine. And I had one once and, you know, made the colossal mistake of selling it. And I would love to own one again.
Yellow gold?
Yes.
And it has that sort of like semi-sector dial. Right?
Yeah, exactly. And there was somebody in, I think, Italy, 10 or 20 years ago, who was making very, very good, and they were honest about it. They were reproduction dials, but very high quality, because for some reason, the dials on those have not, often they don't age particularly well. But it's just from a mechanical standpoint, it's a beautiful, beautiful watch. Just superb.
That's another very Jack Forrester pick.
Yeah.
That's peak Jack.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Jack, close it out. Round 6.
Flex.
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 I'm excited to hear what Jack's flex is.
Flex so hard right now, Jack.
So this is a problem in watchmaking that I've talked about.
Oh, boy.
And written about in the past. So this
the Easter thing?
Yes, okay. This would be.
Nothing if not predictable.
Yeah.
We're all playing true to form today.
Hey, listen, I mean, I've been yakking about it for 15 years and and nobody has even begun to think about tackling it as far as I can tell because it's a huge, huge problem. So what I would do is I would go to Vacheron and I would say, I'm going to drive up to your manufacturer with a dump truck full of money. Here's what...
you just back it up?
Yeah. and what I would like is I would like a pocket watch, which will show the correct date of Easter every year, and which will chime exactly at dawn at my home location on the date of Easter every year. So that's the interesting thing about this problem is, you know, perpetual calendars, the cycle of years repeats once every 4 years. So the cycle of Easter dates does repeat, but it repeats once every 5,700,000 years. So watches that show the correct date of Easter, there was one... I think it was made by Konstantin Chaik, and we'll have to double check. But there was one that shows the correct date of Orthodox Easter. By the Gregorian calendar, it's a harder calculation. The cathedral clock in Strasbourg is actually set up to show the correct date of Easter up until the year 9999. So it craps out at the year 10,000, and I don't want that.
Who wants that? That's a joke. Come on.
So the Patek Calibre 89 shows the correct date of Easter, but it uses I think it's a 30 plus year program wheel, or it's some weird number, like a 27 year program wheel. So if you were to apply the same solution to the entire cycle of Easter dates with a program wheel, you would need a watch that was something like 18 kilometers in diameter.
So you want Vacheron to make you an 18-kilometer pocket
no,
watch?
No, I want them to solve the problem of putting the complication is called a computus. I want them to solve the problem of putting it into a practical size pocket watch.
Okay, that's
a
flex,
which would be extremely difficult to do.
So you don't want a watch as much as you want like a Nobel Prize in physics.
In practical mechanics.
I think you're due for a Nobel Prize.
Yeah, and also, just to be clear on the rules here, we can pick things that don't exist?
No, you can't pick things that don't exist, but I was going to let Jack finish before I told him you can't pick things that don't exist.
Like, I could definitely come up with some cool shit.
Yeah, so Jack, that's your ideal flex. What is your actual flex pick?
Well,
it's got to be something you can go buy, in theory. Like, in theory, if you had unlimited money, you could go buy.
I don't have to play by your soul-crushing rules, man.
You're right. I'm the man. I'm so boring.
The other pick is a 36-millimeter yellow gold Day-Date, modern production.
There we go.
Yellow gold. The vintage ones are great. An 1803 would be a great follow-up, but the modern one has a better movement. Right now, Rolex is making definitely technically the best movements they've ever made, and I would just want that degree of precision, reliability, and newness. You know, because I've always wanted one of these watches. They're a little pricey, you know, gold Day-Dates are a little pricey. Mm-hmm. But I would want something that didn't have somebody else's history associated with it and fingerprints on it, because I want to make it all my own.
I love that Jack went for his flex watch. He went from a thing that doesn't exist and is a nearly impossible mathematical problem to a yellow gold Day-Date.
Like the most ubiquitous watch.
That's Jack.
No, man.
I mean, at some point you just give up.
Yeah, you give up. We got to make it work.
All right. I'm going to maybe break form here a little bit. If we're going with something flex and we're making it not just a flexible spot, but an actual flex.
But I thought it was a flex all along.
That's fine. It's all good. Okay. That's what we're going with. We're running with it. I'm going to go with an RM35. I remember the first time I picked one of those up. Ben and I were at an auction preview way back in the day. And Ben was like, hey, you got to come check this out. And I was like, what the hell is this? Like, it's Richard Mille. Like, I'm so not into it. And he was like, no, pick it up. And when you pick it up, your brain has this moment where it's like an object that size can't weigh that little. And I just laughed. Like, it was just like a reaction. Because you can't square it. It's uncanny.
You know, so the first chance I had to handle one, I had exactly the same reaction and exactly the same thought.
Yeah. And it's just like, if we're going for something ridiculous, like, that's a thing I would love to own. Yeah. Just the reactions you would get from people being like, oh, what is that? You hand it to them. I think so you'd get a lot of people interested in watches.
The question is, you would stick with the 35 or are you referring to the 27? Because the 27 is the first one with the tourbillon that's actually lighter weight. That's like the one that Nadal wears. The 35... it's called the Baby Nadal, which is almost as light, no tourbillon.
Oh, you're right.
Here's the reason I'm going 35. Yeah. The 27 is more interesting. I like the colors the 35 comes in better.
So I agree in general, if you're talking about the 35, but the 27-01, which is the gray one.
Oh, I forgot sweet, about that watch.
Yeah. That's on like the someday list.
Oh, that's true.
Because it's all gray and we all like
it. Yeah, I forgot about that one. I think I'm going to go with that then. I think I'm changing my pick. Yeah. I forgot that the 2701 existed.
Did you just blow up your own?
I don't know. That would have been perfect. You just gave it away.
Yeah, man.
You're giving away all your goods.
That's
you
a good
kept
call.
That for modern sports watch.
Yeah. Also, no one's picked a sub yet.
That's a good call, though. You're
next.
All right. Pick a sub.
Yeah, I mean,
Ben's up next.
It's shocking that we're in the last round and nobody's picked a Submariner, but this is a modern sub. So I have a no-date ceramic sub, and I think it's about as good of a watch as you can buy today. But if I were going to do it, I'd probably go yellow gold, black dial, sub, modern. Wear it every day, beat it up. You know, a yellow gold case on a modern Rolex I think is really nice. And because it's modern, I could take it in the ocean, I could beat it up, and I think, you know, it would really show its age really wonderfully because it's soft, you know, because it's yellow.
Yep.
Yeah, yellow gold sub, modern Rolex.
Love that.
Wearing that watch on the beach is an awesome move.
Yeah, it's a funny thing about yellow gold Rolexes, you know, for people who spend all of their time, you know, kind of addressing increasingly refined levels of taste in watches, it's, you know, it's like spending your entire life eating at fancy French restaurants because you have to write about them, you know, for the New York Times or something, and then you get to go to Peter Lucre and have a steak, and you're like, oh, where have you been all my life? Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's like, it's crass, it's on a certain level. Yeah. It's crass, it's obvious, it's predictable, and it's absolutely delicious.
That's exactly right. Couldn't set it better myself. Mm-hmm. And to be clear, there are many options like the ARM 27. Oh, yeah. Had I thought about it, I would have chosen that. Mm-hmm. You know, 5711 steel is a great watch. 5711P non-anniversary edition would be a great one.
That watch is awesome.
I mean, modern sports watches, like there's no end to their choices. Yeah. You know, Black Bay 58, as you said, is a great So sub, gold.
Boom.
All right. Sea Breezy closes out. Last pick.
All right. I'm doing a modern dress watch. That's my last category. And I am going to pick a Bulgari Serpenti with the gold balls that rattle. They came out with it earlier this year. It's just amazing. I posted on my Instagram. I don't think we wrote about it.
So this is like a rattlesnake watch.
A little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, there's like...
It has like all these like hand-attached gold mini balls. And when you shake your wrist, they all shake.
Oh, cool.
It's amazing.
It is amazing.
And it's covered in like emeralds and diamonds, which I don't really like, but fine.
You'll suck it up and deal with it.
Yeah, I'll suck it up and deal with it. But I mean, the Bulgari Serpenti next to any kind of Cartier is one of the most iconic ladies' dress watches. And I just don't think my collection would be complete without it.
Let's back it up to where you say you didn't like diamonds and emeralds.
It was a joke.
Yeah. I said the Bulgari Octo Finissimo Chronograph.
That would be a good sports watch.
That'd be a good modern sports watch.
It would be a good modern sports watch.
That's a really good watch.
Yeah. But back to me. So.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm done.
I mean, you know, the interesting thing about this whole exercise is that, you know, you sit down and say to yourself, oh my gosh, how can I possibly... You make a choice and you kind of feel emotionally committed to it. But there, you know, I was kind of joking before when I said there's watches, there are so many of them, but there really are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So many of them.
There's very little conflict in this discussion.
Yeah.
It's hard to choose.
No, it's true. And it's, you know, there's a couple things I'm surprised nobody picked. We have nobody picked a Nautilus. Nobody picked a GMT.
Yeah.
You know, the Submariner made it to the second to last pick, which I really thought was going to go much earlier. Mm-hmm. But
if for no
like
other
said,
reason than to undermine one's colleagues.
Yeah
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But like you said, there's a lot of good options out there.
There's a lot of great stuff.
So,
I mean, it's hard to have just six watches.
Yeah. I mean, would you be happy with your six watch collection here?
Yes.
All right. So let's run through the collections real quick. Let's go with who drafted first. So Cara has a steel non-Paul Newman Rolex 6239. She also has the Henry Graves Super Complication. She has a Royal Oak 15450 in steel with, I assume you want the one with the dark gray dial,
yes.
The same one that you own.
It's called Ruthenium.
Ruthenium, oh, sorry. Sorry about that. She's got an original Cartier Crash. She's got a Patek Philippe Patalone 3448 perpetual calendar in white gold. And to close it out, she has a Bulgari Serpenti with the rattling gold balls.
I would be pretty happy with that.
I gotta say, Cara, your auction background is showing.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is fine. You know, it's not a criticism, it's an observation.
No, yeah. It's just who it's
your
just...
epidermis is showing.
It only took us a little over a year to make that joke on the show.
That was a third grade classic.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what happens when you get the four flashbacks. Of us in the room at the end of the day. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So we're looking at what? It's AP, it's Patek, it's Rolex, and it's Cartier.
That's Carl.
And Bulgari.
And Bulgari. Okay. Let's go then with, I picked next. So I've got the 1016 Space Dweller. I've got the Crivia Chronomet Contemporain. I've got the Patek 2526 in white gold. I've got the Rolex 8171. And I've got the Richard Mille RM27 Nadal. It's pretty good. I would take those six watches.
Very solid.
Very solid.
Oh, and the Black Bay 58.
Right.
Missed the Black Bay 58. Yeah. So then we've got Mr. Clymer. Mr. Clymer has the 1563 that belonged to Duke Ellington. Ben also has Neil Armstrong's Omega Speedmaster, because of course. What do you get the man who has everything? Neil Armstrong Speedmaster. We have a 1920s Cartier Tortue Minute Repeater Platinum Bracelet AP Movement. We've got the first Grand Seiko in platinum.
A lot of platinum.
We've got Philippe Dufour's number 00 white gold Simplicity.
A lot of firsts, too.
And then we've got a yellow gold Black Dial Modern Sub.
That's pretty you.
Ben Clymer.
That's you.
A whole bunch of totally insane banana things, and then like a modern yellow gold sub.
Yeah.
And then closing things out, Mr. Jack Forrester.
Yes.
Jack has the modern Seiko Willard reissue. Jack has the Patek Observatory Tourbillon that was cased as a wristwatch in the 1980s.
Good watch.
Really good watch. Jack also has the Patek 3417 A Magnetic. He also has a yellow gold Cartier Tank Louis Cartier. He also has an Omega 30T chronometer in yellow gold. And then finally, Jack's favorite watch, the 36 millimeter yellow gold Day-Date.
Plus
the modern one.
Plus an entirely made-up watch.
Yeah, plus a watch that does not exist.
Jack invented a watch. Yeah,
yeah, Jack solved the problems of the universe with his collection. All right, so what we're going to do here is we're going to put these collections in the article that is associated with this story, and there will be a link in the show notes and on Hodinkee.com, and it's your job to go in and vote who is the best collection here. Which of these collections do you think is worthy of the first ever Hodinkee Fantasy Draft prize? I don't know what we're going to call this prize, but we're going to give it a name and we'll crown a winner on a future episode. So our producer, Gray, will do a dramatic reveal. You'll have a little more than a week to vote. And then we will do a dramatic reveal in probably 2 weeks' time. Any favorites? Any odds on favorites?
What does the winner get?
I don't know.
Glory.
We'll come up with a prize. I'll task Gray with that.
What if we get our Flex watch?
The Flex watch.
If I win, I get the Henry Gay Super Complication.
Okay.
So just to be clear to listeners, this is in fact a popularity contest.
No.
True.
Yeah. Of watches.
Of watches.
Yeah. I'm with Jack on this one. Yeah.
Well, maybe you guys should have been so mean to me about my AP choice.
Coming out of this, we think anyone's an odds-on favorite.
I think you got to go with Jack. Always.
Yeah.
Oh, stop. A
whole bunch of classic yellow gold watches.
Yeah. And made up ones, hits. Too.
I mean, the interesting thing about everybody's choices is they're so it's not a surprise that this is the case, but they're very different choices. They're very characteristic of each person. And they're all interesting.
Yeah.
And for different reasons, which is beautiful.
All right. I think this counts, despite the fact that none of us were playing by the same rules or had any idea what we were doing. I think we pulled this one out.
I'd say so.
Did you literally mean that flex meant like flex, like flexing your biceps?
No, not at all. In actual fantasy football, that you have to draft by position on the team, and there's a spot that's the flex that can be a running back, a wide receiver, or a tight end. It can be any offensive player.
I thought it was flex.
No, it's short for flexible, but like the way Kara spun the rules here. Yeah, so we ran with it.
Right.
Yeah.
So to speak.
So to speak. There we go. So if you made it this far, thank you for sticking with us. And let's may the best man or woman win here.
Sounds good.
Great. All right. See you guys soon. This week's episode was recorded at Hodinkee HQ in New York City and was produced and edited by Grayson Korhonen. Please remember to subscribe and rate the show. It really does make a difference for us. Thank you, and we'll see you next week.